What's your favorite scary movie?
Welcome to 13 Degrees of Screams,
where we watch and dissect your favorite spooky movies.
I'm your host, Alex.
And Stephanie.
And this is a mostly horror podcast.
This week, we break into someone's home in The Strangers.
So, Stephanie.
Yeah.
Have you seen The Strangers before we watched it for the podcast?
No.
This one was not great for you, huh?
I didn't like it.
No. You didn't like it?
I was very upset.
Oh, okay.
Very upset the whole time, honestly.
All right. So, you didn't like it because it upset you, but...
I was scared. You were scared the whole time.
Really?
Alex at one point told me that he watches this almost like once a year or something.
I don't remember saying that. I've seen it a lot, but it's not like a yearly tradition.
Well, it felt like maybe I'm just editing it in my mind, but it felt like you said that you watched it often enough that it felt like once a year. So when I watched this and then I remembered him saying that, I was like, how does your heart take that? Like,
once you know what happens, I mean, it's you know what's going on. You've seen it and there you go. You think you'd have the same kind of reaction if you watched it again?
Yes.
Really?
I was stressed.
You look deadly serious.
I was stressed out. Like, I compared it to like the stress you feel when you know the tethered are coming for the family and us.
Okay.
It's just the whole thing. But after they interact with them, you know, it kind of breaks the tension a little bit. Like, I mean, yeah, they're still scary and you'll still have to like put up with them for the whole movie. But in The Strangers, like it just always feels like they're coming for you. They're coming for you. They're coming for you. And they don't speak. They don't, you know, not really. And every time you think that you've evaded them, somebody else is there.
Yeah. I like it. I don't know. It's a nice cozy movie.
It's cozy. Cozy.
No, it's not cozy. I do like it though. Although
Alex watches this and drinks hot chocolate.
Hot chucky.
I wonder if Santa's coming. Like,
I will say each time I watch it, I don't want to say it gets boring, but I know people will say that they just don't like this movie as much as I feel like they used to. And I could kind of see that. I don't know. After seeing it so many times, I'm just kind of like, okay. Like, I know what's going on. It's a short movie, but it does feel long-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And I just
think, it shouldn't be any longer because it's very stressful.
I'm so sorry.
I can see, I think, now with modern-day technology and stuff like that, it's a little bit harder for everything that happens in this movie to be realistic.
Well, yeah. My other big thing with this movie, though, it's like they were out. Well, we'll talk about when I get to plot, but they were outside multiple times. They could have just booked it. Like, and they managed to get back in the house. I'm like, you could have gotten away from these people really so many times.
Several times, yeah.
And like, what the hell?
I think
are
it's
you
just,
doing?
It's the whole not expecting that there's three of them as well. It's because at first you think it's just one, or it's just one crazy girl that's drunk and or something. And, you know, they thought it through, especially with the blonde girl being the first one to approach them because the guy, James, I think that's what his name is, James. Yeah. Even though she has the wrong house, even though she's being weird, he's like, should I go find her, make sure she's okay? Maybe she needs help or something. And that was apparently not the route to take because she's one of them.
Yeah.
But, and I mean, not saying he did that. It's just that it was a little bit more unsuspecting.
Right.
For them that there's going to be something that was going to happen. We knew because we know.
We know. We don't know.
But they don't know. They don't know what movie they're in.
Yeah, exactly. Although there is a sequel called The Strangers Pray at Night. And it's more cheesy and over the top. They like do a tone shift a little bit. So that might be more.
They do funnies? They do funny things?
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Oh.
But it's not as like serious and like the whole time.
Oh.
Also, before we get into the movie background, they are remaking this into a trilogy with Cheryl Blossom.
I know. Madeline Pesch. Right?
We're going to have to go watch it, Stephanie.
Yeah, I know. I like her, so of course I will. But Jesus Christ.
It's going to be a trilogy nonetheless.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yay! Strangers! Whee! We had it as a 10, but you already said this was like your 13.
This is my 13.
This is definitely not a 10 for you. No. I will say, I saw this in theaters, and the one scene where you see the masked guy in the background did give me some chills. I was like, ooh.
And like when she pulls open the curtain at the glass door and he's there.
Oh, that didn't.
I don't know. I have a glass door in my house for when I let out my dogs. So
now you're like
probably every time I pretty much let them out, I'm like, well, hope that they're okay, and I lock the door.
Sorry, Mars and Apollo, but it might be your time.
They'll come back if they need me.
Yeah. Mommy, please. You're strangers out here.
It's fenced in, but still, I'm not taking no chances.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So, not a fan. That's hottie.
Yeah. I think it's just the stress and just that they were everywhere and nowhere at the same time is how I would describe it. Because, like, they really do like a whole cat and mouse game with them. Like, they keep on, like, kind of letting them get away to just kind of further out the suspense for you. Mm-hmm. Like, there's an instant where What's-Her-Face is crawling in the backyard. She's, like, twisted her ankle.
Yeah.
And she's, like, belly crawling, like, up this little hill back to the house. One of them's right behind her and, like, ready to stab her, you know, has the opportunity. She turns around. She's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you could have just done it right then.
But no. They're toying with them, which is messed up.
It is.
That's not cool.
And then when she actually gets towards the house, like, one of them's sitting on the swing set. One of them's behind her. Mm-hmm. One of them's up at the house kind of waiting for her. Just no.
No good.
No good. And then her car's on fire. So she's like, nah, I can't go anywhere.
Yeah, it's all bad.
Yeah.
It's all bad. But ready to hear some movie background?
Yeah.
So The Strangers is a 2008 American psychological horror film written and directed by Brian Bertino that delves into the disruption of a couple's vacation home by three masked intruders. The chilling narrative stands as the inaugural installment in the Strangers film series. The screenplay drew inspiration from real-life events, including the Manson family tape murders and a series of break-ins in Bertino's childhood neighborhood. And then, despite some pointed-out similarities in the Keddie Cabin murders of 1981, Bertino did not acknowledge this as a reference. So in the beginning, it's like, this movie is inspired by actual events.
True events, yeah.
Not really.
Oh, okay. I was really like, what kind of case is this?
Yeah.
I don't remember this.
So that specifically didn't happen, but like he drew inspirations from like other
Okay. Because the only thing I could think of that came to mind was like the Tate murders, but I was like, not quite. Like,
yeah, no. So they kind of frame it as like, this was really happened, but not that.
Not specifically.
Right. They just try to make it all shocking. It's like, okay.
This guy is also named Kevin. Like,
wow.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. More or less, that's what happened.
Yeah.
So, interestingly, there's a lot.
That this guy's name's Kevin up here.
I know, Kevin, yeah. But also, there's like some interpretations of this movie, and I wrote down this one. Film scholar Kevin Wetmore observed the film's depiction of violence as a reflection of contemporary culture, remarking on the random and unrelated nature of death in a post-9/11 horror setting, in stark contrast to the predictable consequences often associated with negative behavior in the 80s slasher horror. So in this movie, the whole thing is like, it was just a random thing. Like, there was no reason
behind
it. Right,
and then, like, when you think of, like, your screams and stuff like that, like, there's always
no sex.
Yeah,
no
like,
drinking.
No sex, no drugs, like, have to be a pure, innocent angel baby to get out. Like,
yeah, so there was some statements about that I found interesting because the whole, like, I don't want to call it a gimmick, but the whole premise is like, it was just a random thing that could happen to anyone at any time for no reason, which is scary as fuck to think about.
The whole thing just creeps me out. And I mean, I know I've already said this, but even like the beginning shot where you're just getting like the view of passing houses in the car, like obviously you're taking it from the stranger's perspective that they're just trying to pick a house. Like, it's just going to be whoever.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah. Because it's like,
stop it.
I'm not to say, at least when things happen for a reason, like, you murder somebody because they did something to you, you know, stuff like that. It's like, well, yeah. I'm not involved with that.
The quintessential line, it's just because you were home.
Yeah.
Right.
No, yeah. No.
I hate it.
Yeah, I do too. But The Strangers has a 49% on Rotten Tomatoes with a critical consensus that states, The Strangers has a handful of genuinely scary moments, but they're not enough to elevate the end result above standard slasher fare.
Well, damn.
I know. I was like, I don't know. I would give it like a 75 at least.
Yeah. I will say they do draw it out just to just kind of stab them in the end. It was just like a simple like, yeah, goodbye. Now we're done with you.
I know. The movie really could have been like half an hour.
Right.
If you just shortened the time
Like, if you just take it from, like, when they break in to when they stab them, you know, like, it would have been all in all 5 minutes. Like, they really just really stretched it out with, like, the terrifying them thing.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's the plot's paper thin, but the visuals.
Scary.
Scary. I'm scared.
Yeah. It's still scary because, like, who wants to die? Who wants to die?
I don't know.
Like, yeah. Not who wants like that. To be scared and then die? With your best friend or your boyfriend or girlfriend. Yeah,
well, that was a whole messy situation.
Yeah, like, that's a hard one. So that's why I said best friend or...
Bestity / lover friend with benefits?
We're not sure. They didn't really work that out.
They didn't have time.
Yeah.
So. Oh, my fucking God, they fucking died.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to hear about the plot?
Yes.
Okay.
Somebody's like, no!
I mean, I guess we can do that. After what is assumed to be a rejected proposal, James Hoyt and Kristen McKay arrive at James' isolated childhood summer home after attending a friend's wedding. And I will say, James gets a little flack in my head for proposing to her at a wedding.
Who does that?
No one does that. And in the parking lot, like, it's cheap to propose, like, at the wedding, obviously, because that means you didn't put any time into making a romantic proposal for her yourself. You're using other people's dime to make it romantic.
Yes.
But sorry, I'm a lady, so I'm gonna explain this to people that are confused.
You go off.
Yes. But to propose in the parking lot where there's fucking nothing is also like, what?
Doesn't that defeat the purpose of doing it at a wedding?
Yeah, that too. And and then why have you and your buddy decorate the place that you're gonna end up after the proposal? As if it's happening there. Like, why are there roses everywhere in celebration when it could have just been like, this is this big romantic gesture.
Could have done
and it. Then I'm going to propose here. And then we'll have all this time together to be romantic and take baths or whatever you want to do. I don't know. But still, in a parking lot? Like
That's
in a parking lot to lead her to a cabin that's where she now she doesn't want it anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh God. It's so like awkward. Because
it seems like she regrets it too a little bit. Like maybe she jumped too soon kind of thing and said no. Or even like, I still want to be with you, but I don't want to be engaged.
She says she just wasn't ready. And I feel like she didn't regret saying no per se. But she felt bad.
Yeah.
And she was probably like thinking about it. Like, it's one of those things like, did I make the right decision? I don't know. Because also, she probably is afraid now that the relationship's over.
Yeah. And that's kind of where they are at this point in the house.
Yeah. It's so awkward.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I think that's also why it was so tense. Like, it's already a tense situation. Now let's put some killers in here. Yeah. So they're not talking. Obviously, like, it's the silent treatment the whole way, and I don't know. I think maybe he should have just drove her home. But, yeah, we have to stop here. So James calls their friend Mike to ask if he'll pick him up in the morning so Kristen can drive back in James' car separately. The room is filled with unspoken tension. It's clear they care for each other but are trying to figure out how to continue on in their relationship despite Kristen's rejection. So it seems like Kristen still wants to continue. He kind of seems like, if you're going to say no now— why are we even together?
Kind of. Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
I'm curious now. What's the tea? If, let's just say, you were in that situation and you were the man and you proposed and your significant other said, no, I'm not ready, how would you feel? Would you want to keep the relationship going or would you be like, oh, well, shit.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like, both sides are justified, I think. And also, I think it depends how long your relationship is. Like, if this is 6 months, maybe it's just too soon.
Mm-hmm.
If it's been, like, 5 years and, like, it's, like, a whole, like, she's probably assuming I need to propose soon or, you know, it's just any day now kind of situation, then if she says no, then it's probably not going to happen, you know? If it's been multiple years, but to be honest, the contradictory is they do seem happy together before in the flashbacks.
Yeah.
And they almost bang on the table there before stuff starts happening. So it's not like there's no love there.
Right. I was just curious because I go back and forth. I mean, I can see both sides.
Yeah.
And I'm just like,
What do you think?
My problem is I'd be so embarrassed. I'd just be like, we have to end it because I can't
look at you and know that you rejected me.
Right. I'd be like, you know what? It's fine. I'll just pack my bags.
Fair. I think to continue on in the relationship, like, you guys got to come to a mutual understanding that now that you've been rejected, that if they want to get married at any time soon, they will be the one that has to propose.
I know.
Because,
right?
Like, you're like, you blew your chance.
You let me know when you're ready. Because right. I was
that one time.
You let me know. And, yeah, I mean, I don't think I would end things.
Again, I just think it depends on, like, how much time you've been together.
Yeah. That's fair. I was just like, oh, God. I don't know. I could see.
I
wouldn't blame them either way. If they stay together or they decide to end it. That just sucks. That one question just ruined however long their relationship was. It's like, oh, taking a stab at it. Like, ha, taking a stab. See what I did there?
Yeah. I don't know. I know in some perspectives, like, some people like to have, like, a long, drawn-out relationship. But I know in other perspectives, especially for some women, too, like, if you're together more than 2 years, like what are you doing? Like, we spent a glorious 2 years together. Why aren't we married? Why aren't we talking about that?
Like, that's fair. I guess it depends. It just really depends on how important marriage is, I guess.
Yeah, I guess that's true as well. Yeah, there's
so
lots
many
of
factors.
Things.
Okay, yeah. I was just curious. This has now become a relationship podcast. Before it was a zombie survival podcast. Now we're talking about relationships.
Right, right. We're so well-rounded. We get to everything.
For sure. We touch on every little thing.
Come to us for everything.
Yeah. Anyways, back to the movie.
Yes. Around 4 a.m, there's a knock on the door, and a blonde woman, whose face is obstructed in the darkness, asks the couple, "Is Tamara here?" James tells her she has the wrong house, and the woman leaves.
She's like, "You sure?"
She's like, "Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure the first time you asked me, she wasn't here." Shortly after, James builds a fire and leaves to buy cigarettes for Kristen. The woman from before returns and knocks again, but Kristen doesn't answer the door. The smoke from the fireplace causes the fire alarms to go off, so she climbs up on a chair and knocks it onto the floor. As Kristen walks into the kitchen, we see a masked man watching her inside the house.
No!
I'm like, he is already inside?
Yeah, he got in real fast.
Right.
He said, "I'm here."
Yeah. It almost seems like amazing how, like, quickly they get in through doors that you presume to already be locked. That's kind of like the scary part to me as well.
Like, how'd you get in?
Right. And, like, constantly, like, you see them shutting and locking doors, but then, like, the next time you see them, they're open and agape. Like,
excuse me? Do they have a key?
I guess.
They must.
Maybe. Maybe that's what they were planning for. Also, it's so bothersome that this is 4 a.m. already.
Go to bed.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what would have happened had they been sleeping?
When she first knocked.
Would she be like, "Oh, well, never mind.
Yes, they're not home."
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, the car was there, and I feel like they were kind of just, like, watching the house.
Oh, yeah. But do you think they would have broke in and just killed them in their sleep, or do you—
I think they would have woken them up to play with them before they killed them.
Oh, I've been so pissed.
Right?
You woke me the fuck.
I actually saw, I don't remember her name on TikTok, but somebody that was talking about this movie, that the worst part about this is not, like, the break-in. It's not how they stab them. It's that they don't have the decency to kill me, like, at midnight. It has to be at 7 a.m. Like, when people are having coffee in a diner, that's when you kill me. Like,
yeah, I'm tired and, like, rude.
After you've kept me up, like, all morning, like from 4 to 7, terrifying the shit out of me, the worst time to die.
At that point, I'd accept it. I'd be like, just do it.
I'm,
like,
tired.
I'm tired. Like, let me.
I'm ready.
I'd be happy. I'd be like, thank God, it's about time. Seriously.
What are we waiting for, people?
I don't know.
She realizes someone is inside the house when she finds the fire alarm now sitting on the chair.
Oh, my God.
She scrambles to find her cell phone that's now missing and is horrified when the front door is forced open ajar by the blonde woman, now wearing a doll mask and peering in at her.
Eek.
I hate that.
What's your least favorite mask? Which one scared you the most?
I guess this is a little sexist, but the guy scares me. I think that's just a normal response for a woman, honestly.
Oh, no. He was the scariest one.
Yeah.
I thought the other two slayed. I'm like, yes. You guys are gorge.
I like great. The, ladies, I liked, great. Like,
kind of. I liked the pinup one a lot.
Yeah,
I wonder
why he doesn't have, like, some sort of detailed mask.
I don't know.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, no, he was definitely the scariest one.
Right.
I agree. 100%.
Mm-hmm. She locks the door and flees to a back bedroom. When James returns, at first, he doesn't believe anyone's broken in, then goes back to the car to get his phone to find it ransacked. And I'm like, why would she lie to you at this point? Like,
oh, she already rejected you. She's just going to do more stuff to mess with you.
Right, yeah. She wants to make your life fucking miserable.
Really bad.
So now you have to go and look for a murderer.
Yeah.
This bitch.
Bitch.
Because he, like, literally takes her through every room and he's like, see?
Yeah, there's no one here now, dickhead. Like,
right.
I'm aware.
You're here now.
Like, so that would – oh, could you imagine, like – my phone's missing. That moved. The door was open. I saw her. And you're going to try to tell me.
You're going to try to gaslight me.
You weren't even here, sir.
Maybe there's a reason I rejected you.
Yeah. Yeah. Christian was right.
Mm-hmm.
He's
mm-hmm.
not ready for marriage either because he's crazy.
Yeah. No. So James gets Kristen and they attempt to leave in the car when a masked brunette driving a pickup truck forcibly rear ends them. So the couple runs back inside the house.
Oops.
I mean, she rear-ends their car, so it's not, like, drivable. Like, it crunches in on itself, like, at least halfway.
It's a crunchy car now.
It's crunchy.
It's crunchy. It's not going nowheres.
Yes. James finds a hidden gun his father kept at the house, and they hide out in a dark room waiting for the intruders to come to them so he can shoot them. And I'm like, this is the most decent plan you've come up with.
I know.
Please stop running.
Yeah, just stay where you're at.
With the gun, yes.
Because at least... with you to the wall,
mm-hmm.
they can't, like, come up behind you.
Right. They have to come get you eventually, right? Shoot them then. Like,
well.
However, this is when his friend Mike arrives to pick him up, and James, thinking he's the intruder, shoots him dead. I'm like, why didn't we, like, at least see his face?
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you wait for that? Because, like, then you're going to hit him most straight on. But he did. He right. hit him right in the head. So.
I guess he wasn't expecting him to be there.
He called him.
But did pick him up in the morning, though, right?
I mean, it is the morning. It's 4:30, 5 o'clock.
I would not expect anyone to be there to pick me up at 4 in the morning.
I guess so.
I'd be like, bitch, you're going to have to wait till at least 3 more hours.
He did ask him to get him, like, first thing, and he just called him and said he was, like, a little early, though.
Oh, I guess.
And so I'm thinking maybe he was supposed to be there at, like, 6, and he's, like, there, like, an hour early.
Okay. Yeah, but I think I could forgive him being a little trigger happy just because it's like one of those things you're waiting and as soon as someone.
Right. That's, I guess.
I don't blame him, but
yeah. Tension is high.
To say the least.
Right. So, yeah, he thinks he's the intruder and shoots him dead. Distraught from their friend's death, they seem to abandon the idea of shooting them and decide to make a break for the barn where there's a radio transmitter.
Wrong. That was
right.
The first
I was like, you could have just stayed in the room with the gun. Now you know your friend's not going to come. Because you've already killed him.
Yep.
At first, Kristen is to remain inside the house, which I'm like, why?
You're better together.
Right.
Why would you separate?
Yeah, I think it's because he's still fucking mad about the rejection.
I can't look at you right now.
I can't believe you're still mad at me right now.
I know.
But when she hears someone approaching, she runs towards the barn to find James. He's not there anymore, so now they're split up officially. She twists her ankle in the process, and I'm like, girl, maybe it was for the best. You should have just, I don't know, maybe you should have sat in the dark room with the gun, something.
Something else, because she, like, takes a step, and she's, like, down for the count.
Right. Like, she's barely out the door. She trips and breaks her ankle.
Oh, my God. Of course that would happen.
Right?
Right then
I mean,
there.
Same, though. Like,
that'd be you.
I'm clumsy just walking in normal day life. Like, you don't have to put any pressure on me, and I'll fall.
Stephanie takes a tumble.
Like, I regularly have to convince my doctor I'm not being abused at home because I'm just clumsy.
Oh, no.
So she's forced to crawl, but makes it to the radio transmitter only for the brunette to smash it and chase her back towards the house. James has been knocked out by the man in the mask and does the same to Kristen after they find her hiding in the house. And the closet, oh, I hate it. Like, when he's just sitting outside the door.
The pantry thing?
Yeah, you can, like, see through the slits, and she can see them, but they can't see her, or at least she thinks. But apparently they could see her the whole fucking time.
Surprise!
Blondie's like, hello!
Hello, this is me.
Yes. And they kind of have, like, a little square off for a second, but, yeah, eventually she runs back into the bedroom, and she shuts the door behind her, and it gets pushed all the way open. And I find this so weird. She goes back out into the hallway after they just pushed open the door. And that's when he rams into her and knocks her out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, you could have just like shut the door again and locked it.
You think, but again.
But instead she goes all the way out. I don't know. Like, she's seen all of them at this point. So it's not like they're a ghost or anything.
Right. They are definitely there.
Yeah. So
I don't know.
I don't know. Silly, maybe just
horror tropes and stupid decisions. And
mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. I've never been in this situation.
Right. Nor do I ever. How can you tell how many stupid decisions you make? Right.
I'm sure I make a fair share just under the pressure and everything. But, oh my God, knowing me, I would just hide and not move.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, bitch, if you want to kill me, you have to come get me because.
Right. I'm going to make it as hard as possible. Like, you'll be so annoyed by the time you're done with me.
Yeah.
That maybe you won't want to kill me. You'll just want to be away from me.
Right. That's fine. Hey, what are you doing? How's your day? What's going on? My favorite color is blue. What's yours?
Telling him your life story. But yeah. My grandma died when I was 6. Do you have a grandma?
One time I puked on this one roller coaster and it was really gross. The person in front of me got covered in it.
I'm just like you.
Do I want to be besties? Do I have a sleepover?
Like your mask.
It's very scary. I'm scared.
Can you imagine? I'm scared.
Anyways, are you thirsty?
I'm thirsty.
I'll make us some tea. Coffee?
Right. Oh, jeez. So she's knocked out now, and at dawn, the couple awakens strapped to chairs in the living room. Kristen asks why they're doing this to them, and Dollface replies, because you were home.
Great. And yes, it is during the day now.
Mm-hmm.
Bright,
like,
and sunny.
And it looks like midday, not even sunrise. It's like...
Yeah, it's
been
a while.
Why are you here? It's like 10 a.m.
I know. Aren't you tired? You're tired. You got to be tired.
Right. You're putting in a full shift for this. Like, the trio unmask themselves and all take turns stabbing the couple. Afterwards, we see them driving away in a truck and stop two schoolboys on the road to pick up a religious pamphlet. When the boys ask if the blonde is a sinner, she says, sometimes, and we hear one of them say next time, it'll be easier as they drive away. Yeah. The two boys come across the house where they discover the bloodied bodies of Kristen, James, and Mike. Kristen, still alive, startles one of the boys by grabbing his hand and screaming before calling the police.
So, fun fact about this ending.
Mm.
I'm fairly certain, and I meant to look it up, that there's a version of this movie where she is not alive at the end.
Oh, really?
And that whole blah doesn't happen. Because I remember seeing it without that. And then I was very confused when she... was a lot.
Set up, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't think she would have made it, honestly.
She got stabbed a lot.
Yeah. Like, they all took a turn stabbing.
Yeah.
Multiple times.
Yeah. But now she knows what they look like.
So. Yeah, that's true. Do you think she made it, though? Like, I feel like it was all stabbing, like, in her abdominal area, so.
Maybe they missed the vital organs. Well, I mean.
Just around all the important bits.
What we learned from Scream is if you stab off to the side. You miss all the important shit. They were just really bad at aiming.
They kind of
just poked her sides.
Yeah, like, maybe.
Oh, my God.
So you think she survived? Because, like, I mean, I guess there's still a chance, too, that, like, she could have just last moments of shock kind of thing before she passes and then dies before they even get an ambulance or something.
Yeah, I would say that she probably didn't make it. Although, I have heard instances where someone was, like, stabbed a lot and somehow still survived. So
yeah,
I would say unlikely, but still possible.
Yeah, I think in the case when it's like multiple stabbings, it has to be more shallow than what was depicted.
Just like a big old knife. Just
like for instance, I think the girls that tortured that one girl in the Slender Man case, she survived, but I think they were like stabbing her with nail files or something short.
Nail files? Can we be a little bit more?
Wait, no, no, I think they actually did have a knife for her, but they were still, like, short.
It was a butter knife.
Cuts. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I just need to stop that.
Maybe you need to stop talking out of your ass.
Yeah, apparently.
I have no idea. But in any case, if I had to pick, I would say she did not make it.
I would agree. Because otherwise, you know, they're still a two, so they obviously don't catch them.
Yeah, it's true. Are you ready to hear about the Tate murders?
Yeah. But I am glad that this isn't, like, an exact verbatim true story.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
It's not. Does that make you feel better?
It does, because I thought, you know, if they're still out there and they've never been caught, then why?
Why? Although, which we're about to learn, I mean, it just random shit happens. So I pulled all this information from the Britannica website, which makes me feel confident that this is accurate?
Yeah.
So the Tate murders refer to the shocking and gruesome killings of actress Sharon Tate and four others by followers of cult leader Charles Manson on the nights of August 8th through the 9th in 1969 in Los Angeles. Two more people were killed on August 10th. So after highly publicized trials, Manson and four of his followers were convicted of all the murders in 1971. Sharon Tate was a budding actress known for her role in Valley of the Dolls, who was married to filmmaker Roman Polanski and was over 8 months pregnant at the time. In the summer of 1969, the couple was renting a house on Cielo Drive in the exclusive Benedict Canyon neighborhood of Los Angeles. While Polanski was in Europe, their friends, I don't know how to say this name. It's W-O-J-C-I-E-C-H.
Wojcicki?
Yeah. But their last name was Furkowski. And Abigail Folger were staying with Tate. Celebrity hairstylist Jay Sebring was also in attendance. On August 8th, Manson instructed his follower Charles Tex Watson to go to the house with several other cult members and kill everyone there in a gruesome manner. Manson was familiar with the house because its previous tenant, music producer Terry Melcher, had considered, then declined, giving Manson a recording contract. Watson, along with Susan Atkins, Patricia Krenwinkel, and Linda Kasabian, arrived at the property after midnight and encountered 18-year-old Stephen Parent, who Watson shot and killed. Subsequently, they broke into the main house, where they made the occupants gather in the living room. Jay Sebring, a close friend of Tate's, and Tate herself were linked by ropes tied around their necks. Sebring was shot and stabbed to death, while Furkowski and Folger were killed after trying to escape. Finally, Atkins and or Watson fatally stabbed Tate, and Atkins used Tate's blood to write the word pig on the front door. The following night, Manson and his followers, now including Leslie Van Houten and Stephen Clem Grogenwent, went in search for more victims. They targeted grocery store executive Leno LaBianca and his wife Rosemary, tying them up, robbing them, and then leaving them to be killed by the other members of the group. These horrific crimes caused widespread panic in Los Angeles. Initially, investigators struggled to connect the two murder scenes, attributing the Tate murders to a drug transaction. However, following the arrest of various Manson cult members at their base in Death Valley, the truth began to emerge. The trial, which combined the Tate and LaBianca murders, resulted in the conviction of Manson, Atkins, Krenwinkel, and Van Houten in January 1971. Watson was later tried and convicted, with all receiving the death penalty, which was later commuted to life in prison after California abolished the capital punishment in 1972. Despite being eligible for parole, their requests were repeatedly denied. However, in 2023, Leslie Van Houten was granted parole and released from prison. The story of the Tate and LaBianca murders was chronicled in the book Helter Skelter, The True Story of the Manson Murders in 1974, co-written by Vincent Bugliosi, the prosecutor at the trial. That was the Tate murders.
Yeah.
No good.
No. I always feel so sad that she was pregnant when it happened.
Yeah.
That makes me extra sad.
I forget about that. Like, really?
Yeah.
Like, okay, it's like one thing to kill an adult, but like...
Yeah.
Leave children and, like, unborn
children alone.
Like, do not do that.
Right.
That sucks. I did have a little bit more info, and I pulled this from the Screen Rant website. So the second inspiration for The Stranger's True Story is the infamous 1981 Keddy Cabin murders, which weren't, I kind of mentioned, weren't confirmed, but I didn't want to talk about them because they speculated that it was involved. So four people were killed in the small California resort town, including Sue Sharp and her son John, daughter Tina, and John's friend Dana. Disturbingly, the motive for these murders is still unknown, as the Keddy Police Department never caught the real-life killers, and the case remains unsolved. Mm-hmm. Obvious similarities around here with the three mass assailants in The Strangers wandered off into the morning chill after massacring Kristen and James simply because they were home.
Mm-hmm. So it is the same thing.
Kind of.
At least from this one.
Ish. So.
Don't like it.
Yeah, but they were never caught. So, JK, that didn't happen, Steph. That was a joke. I kid.
Thank you.
You look so upset.
I am very upset.
I'm sorry. It's no good.
This was altogether very sad. Oh. And scary. No, thank you.
Oh, bad. Thank you for listening. If you join the show and listen on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, giving us a 5-star rating is super helpful. And we always appreciate it. And Stephanie, let me know that you could comment on Spotify now.
Yes. So if you want to comment on our episodes, let us know how we're doing, or if you like something in particular, feel free. We have to approve them, but as long as you're not, you know, yelling profanities at us, we'll probably let it through.
Yeah. So.
We're open to criticism and ways we could improve. Let's put it that way. So
yes, exactly.
Tell us what you like, what you dislike, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yes. And you can find us on social media using 13 Degrees of Screams.
This has been 13 Degrees of Screams, and we will see you next week.
Bye. Helter skelter in a summer swelter, forwards on a shelf on a file show. 8 mile high. I don't know it all, but
Slay.
It's very rhymey.
Yeah, it rhymes. That's all that matters.